SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Churchill Downs, welcome to Derby Week. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. When I left you at noon on Friday, we had a certain lineup for the Derby. And actually, things have moved so fast and so steadily and and in so many different directions, I'm not even sure, or I don't even know what the point would be of trying to lay out what who came and who went while the weekend was unfolding. But it was a very interesting, call it, I don't know, 60 hours, give or take. Your field has changed, and it does seem like, barring any late issues, and that's always a possibility, but in terms of decision making anyway, and in terms of the horses that had, you know, considered coming, and we were still waiting for confirmation, those elements are in place. The horses that exited the field included decision makers like Dreamshake and Get Her Number, who are bypassing the race for other opportunities. And certainly Dreamshake is going to get plenty of attention into the Pat Day Mile. And Get Her Number didn't see necessarily what Gary Barber and Peter Miller have in mind there. But more importantly, the movement confirmed and very quickly got King Fury and Keep Me In Mind into the field at the time, as the 19th and 20th horses. And then just as quickly, in fact, on Friday night, I happened to have done the Inside Churchill Downs show with Darren and KK, Kevin Kirstein, and with Scott Shapiro. And Darren let it out. It was news to me that Brooklyn Strong was suddenly on the list as a candidate, and that he would potentially, you know, move into the field. And then no sooner does that get established that Caddo River exits the field with either a fever or just not up to snuff, let's put it that way. And so the in again, out again Caddo River is out. And that immediately put Brooklyn Strong was late to the party, even, you know, getting into a Derby prep, let alone getting into the field. And this morning at Parks, Danny Velasquez working Brooklyn Strong, and the word had come yesterday. He originally was going to work yesterday, but they waited till today. And Velasquez said that if everything went well and that if he came out of it well, he would come to Louisville and join the field. So the horses that are in this race and that will be drawn tomorrow in about 26 hours, the three that were waiting when we left you at noon on Friday, King Fury, Keep Me In Mind, and Brooklyn Strong. And there's not a rider yet for Brooklyn Strong, but we can tell you that King Fury, of course, Brian Hernandez Jr. out of the Lexington. Davey Cohen was always associated with Keep Me In Mind. And we'll wait for Velasquez for a call on Brooklyn Strong. There were also other decisions that came down, including sainthood, picked up Corey Lannery. And nice for Corey Lannery to get a Derby mount. And there was also the rather pleasant news that came, and actually I said no jock, but on Brooklyn Strong, but Umberto Rispoli is getting Brooklyn Strong. So after all the consternation, and granted, getting the mount on Brooklyn Strong, not the same as getting the mount on, keeping the mount on Rock Your World, but he's in the race, and he'll get his first Derby experience. So there's your 20, and it what changed mostly, I mean, not only getting, you know, getting a horse, you know, an extra horse in, and the pace scenario is what is most impacted, and Cattle River coming out, as we suggested on Saturday, the seeming likelihood, or yesterday, the likelihood that Rock Your World will be your pace setter, and Medina Spirit, who made his first appearance yesterday, he had ponied on Saturday after arriving, but actually, you know, made a galloping appearance yesterday, and then again today. Looks looks very good, Medina Spirit. Medina Spirit, you know, the two, you know, exiters from the Santa Anita Derby figure, you know, prominently up front, and from there we'll reestablish. And I think you know, once now you have to just wait for the draw and see if anybody with speed, if anybody's hand is forced by the draw tomorrow, if anybody draws extremely outside or extremely inside, that are going to have to, you know, be quarter horsed out to gain early position. You know, the ones you already knew, of course, Essential, Equality, Hot Rod Charlie, Superstock, Like the King, Known Agenda, Rock Your World, Bourbonic, Medina Spirit, Midnight Bourbon, and Mandaloon, Highly Motivated Helium, Soup and Sandwich, Dynamic One, Sainthood Hidden Stash, Obesos, King Fury, Keep Me in Mind, Brooklyn Strong. There's your 20. And there's not... there's, you know, nothing to do now but to wrap them up, the proverbial bubble wrap portion of the proceedings, wrapping them up tight, putting those wads of cotton on their legs, and taping them up every night, and you know, watching and carefully and holding your breath every day when they come out. It was a busy session. It was quiet yesterday, pretty quiet yesterday. Today was a busy session, as most of the horses that had worked, particularly on Friday, and some on, you know, from Saturday, had, Friday ended up being busier because of the concern over weather. And of course, they opened Saturday night. Did not, you know, it rained, it was wet, it wasn't as, you know, didn't get inundated as was the concern, and they were able to run the stake on the grass, which was nice, the William Walker. So that came off okay, and they had a nice crowd. They had 11,000, apparently, on Saturday night to get things going. And it's funny, it always seems that the Kleins win a feature or something in Derby week. It seems like that's a written in stone that the Klein family has to win something. Field Day wins the William Walker, Tyler Gaffleone for Brad Cox. After the horses that worked on Friday and Saturday, they're all back on the track. And I didn't even try to write them all down. Most mornings I'll jot down names, and just as a memory, to serve the interests of memory jogging. But for the most part, and I, almost everybody, just looking down now, almost everybody made an appearance. The two late arriving West Coast horses, Rock Your World, and of course Medina Spirit was already early. Hot Rod Charlie and Rock Your World. They just ponied to the track today, so we really didn't get pretty typical first day, and they'll gallop tomorrow. So we'll know more and we'll see more, and you'll see them on the tomorrow on the work show as well. Midnight Bourbon, the lone worker this morning, and Midnight Bourbon has caught plenty of attention leading in to Derby. And now, you know, this will be the portion that we, on a daily basis, you'll hear about horses that seemingly are coming in the way you want. In a lot of ways, you've got a Derby field that invites, adventurous opinions. That seems like a universal approach from what we can tell from the people you talk to, and the typical who you like conversations, and the refrain, even for people who like essential quality as a key, everybody has really the same approach. Well, I think essential quality, there's no real knocks, but but the price, right? That is being repeated constantly. It's going to be a fun week of conversation, it's going to be one of those. I mean, we always say that if there's a horse coming into this race that you want to play and that you want to work through as a key horse, don't be talked off. There may be horses that are on the fence in your ticket building, and those you could be moved off or on. That's fine. But there's nothing worse than having kind of landed and had a notion about your Derby horse, and then getting off and then having them run well and being heartsick the rest of your horse playing career, the rest of your horse playing life, subsequently. There were some fun parts of the last couple of mornings, in particular. Yesterday, the possum was the highlight. There's no doubt. There's some speculation that the possum is pregnant. Then there was just the assumption that it was just a fat possum. And right during the training session, possum comes out and is going up and down the side of the track under the rail, and then decides while Clairiere is working and while Medina Spirit is galloping at the end of the training session at 7:45. Here's the possum's going to decide to cross the track now, the several hundred that were on hand got a big kick out of the possum. I video documented the possum. That's the only moniker that he's received. So there's your early setup. There's no movement when it comes to the Oaks. The Oaks field is set to be drawn today. We'll listen in across the way at the Aristides Lounge. We'll listen to them assemble the field of 14. And then, of course, the racing office will handle the rest of the Oaks Day card. And then we'll repeat the process tomorrow at 11 o'clock. And your Derby field will come together. All right? We always look forward. This is the ribbon cutting, as it were. So there's your basic Derby Oaks weekend. We'll certainly hear from Mike Welch and probably Marty McGee, not necessarily this morning, but over the next couple of days, If I can catch Mike actually today, I might get him to do kind of the weekend recap. That probably would be worthwhile, because there were some works that certainly can be discussed, and you know, some works that not so much the way they went about what was mostly even mundane fractions, but then you know there's other aspects, the way they finish and how far they end up going on the gallop out, how far around the turn or onto the backstretch or famously all the way to the track kitchen. So we'll get some of that ideally later in the morning. We've got a couple of things that will start the morning, and one sad note, very sad note, and I actually have a couple of passings that'll be noted, but one that we'll talk about with our first visitor in particular in about 5 minutes. Elliot Walden is going to join us, and the passing of John Ward, the news spread yesterday early afternoon, and you know, John Ward, of course, with wife Donna, because they were a training team, very much a training team. And John Ward, you know, the horses ran, you know, under John's name, but they operated that barn together for 3+ decades, probably 35 years. And people are focusing in rightly on, you know, it's Derby week, and it does seem that every year when you come for Derby, there's one of these passings that is, you know, is very much tied. And sometimes it's a horse, you know, sometimes it's a Derby horse. But the 2001 performance and field and race and, you know, the win by Monarcos in near record time. I mean, one of the best performances in Derby history. Georgie Chavez, of course, on board Choppy, and Chavez had other successes too. He rode for the Wards, but the first horse I associate, and I think probably the first big horse that I remember with John Ward, it was Beautiful Pleasure, and seeing her, you know, particularly in New York, and I think Choppy, pretty sure Choppy rode her mostly as well, the association that the Wards enjoyed with Jack Oxley, and in fact, Donna Ward and Jack Oxley, I think bred one of the Ward's early successes, one of their early big stake horses. So we'll let Elliot Walden pay tribute to John Ward coming up at 9:20. And Elliot, one of the first people he worked for when he was starting out, was John Ward. And then, of course, John Ward, I should also mention, after the Wards stopped training, John had a long career, extended his influence and his service to the industry as the executive director of the KHRC for, gosh, that might have been 7, 8. 10 years, a good long while. John Ward was involved on that end as well. So Elliot will tell you more on this front. I'll mention a passing in Saratoga, actually, back in at home, and also one right here at the racetrack that are both different kinds of racetrack associated individuals. Word came to me from his nephew, Brian Monaco, that Jimmy Monaco, also known as Uncle Jimmy, at Valley Acres in Saratoga, the nursery center, but for my purposes, the source of the pies, the Morningside Farm pies that we would bring to the racetrack. And Jimmy was in his 90s. It was miraculous. Every spring when he would reopen, you'd be, pleased and delighted. I knew him a little bit more than the casual customer, probably, because his nephew Brian came in on DT and came in on a number of our horses. And I don't even know how, I'm not really sure how I even came to figure out, or Brian and I figured out that, that I think he heard me talk about Valley Acres on the air. And then told me, that's my uncle. Jimmy was wonderful. You'd buy the pies and carrot cakes and obviously fruits and vegetables, and he'd always say, take a peach, take one of those peaches. He just came in and we'll miss him terribly. And I don't know what the future holds for the Valley Acres itself. I mean, it's been there. It's there 70 years. I've been coming to Saratoga since the late 70s, early 80s. And so it's there that whole time. And predates that, obviously. So hearts go out to the Monaco family. And then just yesterday morning, Saturday morning, I was, at first very pleased when I saw Winifred, who is one of the elevator operators in the clubhouse. And I've been coming here, 20 plus years. And Winifred has been, in the middle elevator, running it for as long as I can remember. And to the left, there's a bank of three elevators that take you upstairs. And I see Elliot is with us, and he'll echo this too, because Elliot has, been in those elevators even more than I have. And I asked Winifred how Wanda was, who is always in the next elevator, and she passed along the sad news that Wanda had died in January, not COVID, she had worked here. Winifred's been here 20 plus years. Wanda, she was over in the Jockey Club suites for years, and then moved to the when they remodeled the building, she moved to the clubhouse. And it's surprising how people like Wanda and Winifred become friendly, and you become accustomed to seeing them and happy to see them. So I pass along thoughts to Wanda's son and the countless Downsgoers that knew Wanda like I did. And Elliot Walden joins us. Elliot, good morning. Yep. Did we lose Elliot? Case? No? Case, do we have... No? I can't... I'm not hearing him. No? All right. Casey's got to pick up Elliot on the, because sometimes I do it myself. Your ear or your cheek hits the mute button on your phone, and you're talking away, and then you realize they can't hear you. So Give it a second, and we'll get Elliot Walden in here. And in addition to, you know, talking to Elliot about John Ward, there's plenty of things happening at Windstar to discuss with Elliot as well.
Steve. Right.
There we go. There's Elliot Walden.
How are we doing?
There we go. We're good. I you know, obviously saddened Elliot. The word that John Ward and I had not heard that he had been, you know, they'd been suffering from cancer, but I saw your quotes and your association with him, and you certainly trained you know, alongside him.
Yes, we did. I mean, he was my first job on the racetrack, and worked for him when I was 14 and 15, and
wow.
You know, had great memories of that. He trained some horses for my dad, and we had a filly named Twofold who had a half-sister named Miss Musket who ran against Chris Everett in a match race in California. So it go back a long way with Mr. Ward.
All right. Casey's going to pick you up for a second, John. There's something wacky on your line. I don't think he can hear it. I don't know if that's somebody calling in. Oh boy. Yeah. Always, you know, it's always a challenge on the phone side. I didn't know that I hadn't seen that Elliot had that connection too, that John trained for his father. And you know, just on a statistical basis, you know, Ward never had tons and tons of horses. You know, he had always had an elite handful. You know, in fact, you go back to the earliest days, and yeah, the most starters he ever sent out was 200. Typically 100, 120, up 140, 50, 160. So, you know, he never had a huge string of horses. Elliot, I was just you know, riffing. I didn't realize that hadn't seen that he trained for, you know, for the family.
Yes, he did. That was back in the 70s, and you know, he was just a well-respected horseman, and gave a lot of young people start. Meg Levy texted me last night. She started working for John Ward as well because he was based in Lexington, had a barn on Rice Road that Calumet now owns across from the back gate at Keeneland, and so he gave a lot of young people a chance.
I first saw them at Saratoga on a regular basis, and you know, they would always bring a string up, and I mentioned earlier, you know, Beautiful Pleasures, the horse that, you know, even before Monarcos and the success in the Derby, but it was Beautiful Pleasure that was really the biggest star, and they were a team, Elliot, I think is fair to say, right? I mean, Donna was very much, that was a training tandem.
Absolutely. I mean, Johnny relied on Donna a lot. And Donna is probably not anymore, but was a great rider. Could tell a lot on the back of a horse and gave him great feedback. So they definitely are a team.
I also had an interesting comment. Gary Young said that he watched them train and that they had a bit of a different approach. That sometimes they would have their horses out there in the morning, you know, very leisurely for even an hour, and you know, basically let the horse, you know, stand and really soak things in and, you know, basically, you know, be out of the barn, you know, for probably three, four times longer than most trainees. And that, you know, that some of the success could maybe be tied to, you know, kind of a different approach.
Well, they did. They definitely, you know, Johnny and Donna did things the way they wanted to, and had plenty of success doing it. And you know, Mr. Oxley was good to them. They were a great team for a long time, and you know, he had started actually started owning horses with Mr. Ward when I was there as a 15-year-old. So that was 32 years ago. So, you know, they, and then, you know, Jack Oxley has went on and has used Mark Cassie here of late, but, yeah, they had a lot of success together.
I also saw, and I knew that I had seen a horse that, the Donna co-bred with Jack Oxley, and it was Pyramid Peak, which is kind of cool.
That is cool. They were great friends, and Donna and Debbie were great friends, and you know, so it was you know, he was loyal to them, and they were loyal to him.
Well, for those that have never seen it, Joe McGinnis wrote a book called The Big Horse, which really chronicles Monarcos and it really tells the, you know, the story. And that was my first Derby, and it wasn't a bad first Derby to, you know, to start my run of Derbies.
Oh no. I mean, he ran fast and he ran super. And I think he's the only one to break 2 minutes. Of course, it was a very fast racetrack that day, if I recall.
Yeah.
But other than the Secretariat.
Exactly. And you know, it's funny, in the same Blood Horse obit that where you're quoted, John famously had said he was always glad that that as good as Monarcos ran and as good a horse as he was, that he didn't break Secretariat's record, because he said he's a nice horse, but he's no Secretariat.
Right. Absolutely. Well, John always saw it the way that it was. And I think his time at the commission was that way as well.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up. You know, as an administrator, you know, a guy, you know, somebody that's been around the game as he was, to have that expertise, you know, and to really understand, you know, those intricacies, it was pretty valuable. And of course, later, Tracy Farmer as well. And you know, you think about the kind of people, and particularly in Kentucky, you know, you have to be accomplished to be in that directorship.
Yes, sir. I mean, he was. And I think anytime, you know, I think we're all a product of our own experience, and you know, they help you make your experience helps you make better decisions, and you know, there's no question that his training career helped him in his role as a commissioner.
John Ward, and thoughts out to Donna and to the many, many friends and associates, and we'll pass along more information as it comes to us. And Elliot, you know, obviously it's Derby week, and so the focus, it's tough not to, you know, not to look ahead and be, you know, excited about the return to the first Saturday in May, as opposed to the first Saturday in September. Some WinStar news and business, and you guys have really been making some headlines of late.
Yeah, I mean, it's we've had a great spring, and you know, it's we're looking forward to this year's Derby. It seems like a wide open Derby. I would kind of put Essential Quality in a group by himself, and then I think it's wide open after that. Obviously, you have some very nice horses in there, and we'll see which one steps up. We have a horse named Sainthood who has run three times and is doing extremely well, and we're going to find out on Saturday if he's good enough.
Pause for a moment on Sainthood, and at first I was a little surprised that you guys persevered. You know, you got the points out of the Jeff Ruby, and I wasn't, you know, I wasn't sure that, you know, given how lightly raced he was, that you'd you know, that you would press forward. What, explain what goes into that decision, Elliot.
Well, it wasn't a slam dunk, and I think the main thought process was that we felt like we should have won the race. If you go back and look at the race,
yep,
he got dead stopped at the 3/16th pole. There was an inquiry into the race, and rightly so. I think they made the right decision not to take the winner down, because basically he was coming around us at a point where we were kind of waiting for room. I thought originally when I watched it live that maybe he came in and Sainthood got his hind end knocked out from underneath him and really almost came to a stop. And then swung out and really made a nice run from the 16th pole of the wire, was gaining on the winner and in the whole field. And that gave us confidence to feel like that he'll want more ground. And, you know, so if he wins the race, does that put it in a different perspective? Do you think about it differently? So that's kind of how we viewed it. And, you know, I can just tell you he's had a great month since the Jeff Ruby. You know, if you've seen him work, with Known Agenda. And you know, if you didn't know who either horse was, you would have picked Sainthood. So, you know, I think that he deserves a chance in a very wide open race.
Draw tomorrow, and we'll watch for Sainthood and plenty of other. Obviously, there's no shortage of WinStar runners, but at the same time, Elliot, even if Sainthood you know, doesn't make a big impact in the race, WinStar can potentially, you know, be rewarded in other ways, and that's including any number of WinStar stallions that are represented on Saturday, including Midnight Bourbon, Son of Tisnow, and you got Hidden Stash, Son of Constitution. Keep Me in Mind got in over the weekend. He's the son of Leaban, who was brought to Kentucky from New York. So, you know, you got some other rooting interests if it's not Sainthood.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's going to be a great day of racing, and excited to just be able to have the opportunity to participate. Obviously, a little bittersweet in the fact that we had the favorite a month and a half ago, and he got injured, and you know, he's on the comeback trail, and life is good. Can't wait to get him back, you know, we go from 2-1 to 30-1. But you never know how things happen, especially in the Kentucky Derby with 20 horses.
Got to ask you as well, Elliot Walden, joining us from WinStar. And just this past weekend, I haven't given everybody the final details about OBS. But as the sale was starting, news came that WinStar is going to get involved with this I'd call it a startup, but a new microshare operation known as Commonwealth, and certainly noticed, you know, early first day of the sale, a Midnight Storm colt that Woodford offered that you guys took down for $550,000. Talk about this decision and your view of the microshare concept, its viability, its fairness too, Elliot. Explain to people. I'm sure you didn't go into this, you know, without careful consideration.
No, absolutely, and you know, I think that we've watched it for the last year with my racehorse. And then also Spendthrift's involvement with my racehorse. And we saw how that kind of moved my racehorse forward as far as presence, as far as quality horses, exposure, and felt like that we wanted to kind of do the same thing with Commonwealth. We like Commonwealth's technology. They have an app that is very cool, and we think it will cater to the younger generation, and feel like that you know, with the future of horse racing, I don't want to say it's the future, but I do think that it's an involvement. I mean, when we got involved in Australia, I went down there and had a Breeders' Cup hat on, and the stewardess on the flight asked me if I was going to the horse sale, recognized the hat. My customs agent told him I was going to the horse sale, and he said, "Oh, I own a piece of a horse." There's a lot of people that own in the mainstream that own horses in Australia. And so I think this could be an opportunity to get horse racing back into the mainstream. Now, is it for everyone? No. Do we hope that it cultivates owners out of it one day? Yes. Do we hope it cultivates fans and handicappers? Yes. I think it's multifaceted how it could impact horse racing. We'll just have to wait and see. But I think it's a great chance and a great idea. And we like the guys running Commonwealth, Chase Chamberlain and Brian. And we just think that, we wanted to kind of get a strategic alliance. We bought a Midnight Storm colt, as you alluded to. We bought a Curlin colt. We also are putting in Country Grammar, the horse that we ran with Bob Baffert in the Californian last weekend and got beat a nose, ran 108 Buyer. We think he's going to be a nice horse for the older division. So we've got a lot of good things happening, and we're excited about it. We've gotten great feedback since we announced it, and we'll see where it takes us.
Well, it certainly was notable, and I know people have a certain impression that somehow, the people that are buying these shares are somehow being manipulated or taken advantage of. But I mean, everybody that was involved last year it seemed like they were just so delighted and thrilled. I really have been a little confused by the criticism of it. I saw nothing but people, gushing about how special it was to be involved that way and have a legitimate claim that that they're associated, with a horse and with a Derby winner. And it's not as if, those monies are, the major part of the expenses that are accrued. It's a way for people to get their feet wet in the game. And I know from my own experience, Elliot, with the small thing that we've done with DT, where people got in and we let them buy in the way these racing clubs, the way you guys did it as well with Stablemates. And those people get the experience, and then they become bigger than fractional owners. They then move into a bigger partnership or move in on their own. So it's a great low cost introduction to the game, and I don't see why anybody is critical of it.
Well, Steve, you and I both know, and everybody listens, social media can be a place where there's no accountability for what you say, and negative things can be thrown out there. And so I would just hope that the bottom line is that, we need to think about ways to expand horse racing or we're going to die. And I think that anything that give credit to B. Wayne Hughes. B. Wayne mm-hmm. Hughes, a year and a half ago, recognized the vision of it. He doesn't need money. He doesn't need trying to make something at his age that although he does, because that's what he lives for. He lives for continuing for the next thing. That's why he's been such a great legacy. That's why he's had such a great legacy in business and in the farm and in this industry as well. But he thinks it's really going to be the future of horse racing. And I would just say that when B. Wayne thinks something like that, would people better pay attention? And I would just say to the naysayers, give it a chance. I think the one thing that anybody can feel confident in is that it's SEC regulated, so it's above board. There's people looking at it. It's all straightforward. It's all clear. It's all documented. So there's nobody's getting manipulated. Everybody gets a chance to participate, and if that can lead to something else, then we've done our job. And I think that that's the way we should look at it. And I'll tell you this, I have been really impressed with the trainers. Bob Baffert, Steve Asmussen, I've talked to those guys about it when they had horses for my racehorse, which they still do. And they are enthused about it. Now, you would think that they would not be enthused. Oh, gosh, I've got 1,000 people that I've got to talk to or something like that. But they're actually embracing it. They're actually looking for opportunities. I had, we had one of our stable mates, guy that lives in California, go out for Crystal Balls race, and he's got a picture with Bob Baffert, thumbs up, and he doesn't own but, just a small piece of stablemates. But Bob and Steve and Todd and any other trainer recognize that we need owners. And they come from starting to get passion, starting to get enthusiasm about the sport. And so you hear stories all the time about dads who used to take their sons to the racetrack when they were little, and now those sons are now owners. Well, that doesn't happen as much anymore. And so we've got to create new ways to generate fans, horse owners, handicappers, whatever it is in this industry.
Well, you've tried kinds of innovations, including the stablemates concept that has been sustained and has been successful, and these. I guess you could call them almost mega partnership concepts that seem to be now part of the firmament, and then Windstar just as a going entity. Elliot, I appreciate the tribute about John and John Ward, and best of luck with sainthood this weekend, and I saw that unanimously the Louisiana bred is entered in the Oaklawn Stake on Saturday as well, the fun closing day card there. Steve Asmussen and you guys and CHC. So best of luck, and I know I'll see you, I'll probably see you as early as tomorrow.
All right, Steve. Thank you so much.
Not at all. Elliot Walden, everybody. And Elliot, so many different areas of the game. I've reached out over the years, whether it's horses that he trained and then his long career now at Windstar. And in this case, appreciating John Ward and bringing you up to speed on what Windstar is doing. And that story broke, the other, in fact, I was on with Sid, I think, when, was that last Wednesday? Not this past Wednesday? No, it was the week before. And then no sooner that happened, they swung into action at OBS. And the sale, the sale ended well. Speaking of partnerships, Eclipse and White Horse Stables, together on an Into Mischief on Friday, hip 1039 colt that went in 10 flat, 875,000, and there was another Into Mischief that Donato Lanny bought for Mr. Fletcher as well. That was a filly. Randy Miles had a very good sale. So we'll do some more recapping, I'm sure. I'll get some final OBS thoughts as well. One of the biggest stories, though, that came out of Saturday, aside from any number of results, stake results, and we'll get to everything, including all those nice stakes in Golden Gate and Pimlico. Something happened on Saturday that was as unusual and as unpredictable, and we do call it the greatest unscripted drama in sports, and tying the sales together with results. You may have seen my tweets. Two horses, first in New York early in the day, and then later in California, debuted. And at the heart of the debut was West Point with 2 7-figure purchases. And they came at Saratoga as yearlings in the summer of 2019. And on the first night at the Saratoga sale, Fasig Tipton, in the Humphrey Finney Pavilion, $1 million purchase. And then the second night, $1.5 million. And, you know, so often people say, oh, those 7-figure purchases, what, you know, what's the success rate? Well, those yearlings, they get trained as 2-year-olds, and then they make their way to the racetrack, and then they go to the trainers and that they're going to go to. West Point took on some partners. And of all the crazy things, the two of them, a Curlin and a Tappet, debut on the same day. And Terry Finley joins us. And Terry, you couldn't make this up. Terry, where is he?
Hey, thank you.
There
you
is.
I did make it up. I sat down right at that snack bar up at Saratoga, and this is exactly what I planned. So, but you are right. The vast majority of them are those big dollar horses. You never hear from them again, and it's a tough. You know, we both know at any level of this crazy game we love, it's tough, right? It just kind of the spotlight's higher on those big dollar horses, but we think we got two pretty good ones. That's for sure.
Well, we'll do it in chronological order, and we'll start with the opener at Belmont. And I want to make sure that the stories are told thoroughly, because the first one was First Captain, who was $1 million, and this is a Bobby Flay bred son by Curlin from Hill and Dale, out of America. It was Bobby's nice one of the nice brood mares, and it's been very productive for Bobby.
Yes.
And you guys take him home, and then take on partners. I mean, talk about first picking the horse out and what transpires literally minutes after you make the purchase.
Yes, Steve. So I give the credit to David and Gordo and his team, Mike Shannon and some others that kind of do the legwork for David. But a couple of years ago, we just decided, we needed to make some changes and to focus on better quality horses, and as a result, we needed to raise more money and or bring in more partners. So Lane's End sold this colt for Jane Lyon, and boy, she stayed in as well. You're talking about? I'm talking about Flight Line, but I'm just talking about overall.
Yeah,
we're seeing more and more partnerships that are formed in the back ring and or before the sale or right after the sale, and by that I mean partnerships of end users. And so we really think that helps. I'm not sure that the consigners really love it, because you don't have two or three different entities banging on each other in the auction ring. But I think it all works out, right? Because when you get a shot to get some good horses, you have more people who are really invested in the game. They get a chance to enjoy a really exciting one. So I think that's the essence of these partnerships that are being formed, pretty much at every auction. You mentioned about OBS. And I saw any number of these things come together with other entities, as well as the West Point gang. So, we just, Bobby and I have been friends for a while, and I really know he does a good job, and he really is intent, and he's really passionate about his Broodmare band. And Arthur Hancock and I have also become friends, and Arthur was touting this horse, you know, far and wide. And he doesn't really tout overall. You know, we all know Arthur. He's not a guy with, you know, a lot of sermons and a lot of stories on the backside or at a sale. So everything just kind of came together. And the Manganeros of Siena Farms, I will tell you that they jumped up after they saw him in the flesh. About 10 seconds later, Anthony Manganero said, "I'll take 25%. And that really, really puts us in a great position, because when you're buying these kind of horses, it's tough to start going out and to raising $10,000 and $20,000 and $30,000 increments. So to have somebody like that with that backbone of support, I think really was the tipping point to put us in a position to buy a beautiful and expensive colt like this.
Now, and the two of them, first captain at Belmont under the care of Shug, and Siena Farm, you mentioned. Siena is a common theme in both of the horses. Flight Line, of course, with John Sadler in California, but first captain early in the day, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, Bobby Flay came back in, and that's an interesting commonality as well, because Jane Lyon, who you mentioned, Summer Wind, she came in as well on Flight Line. So the breeder of both of these horses stay involved, and then Woodford tied in to first captain, and Costa Aronis in a big way on Flight Line. And in terms of results and in terms of development, Terry, talk about first captain first, and we'll figure out how it is that it took both of them until April of their 3-year-old year to make the races. But talk about his development curve. Do they go to the same farm to get started?
They did not. The Mayberries actually broke on Flight Line, Stephen. They do a lot of work for David and Gordo. They broke all of his really good horses, or the vast majority, including Zenyatta and the other ones that David has picked out of, sure, out of the sales. And first captain went to Eddie Woods. So that was a pretty darn crop down, a pretty darn good crop down there. Eddie Woods, I don't know, he breaks about 300 horses. He has all the SF horses. The litany of owners that he has is really, really top class. So you have the ability to really get a sense of where you stand at that time in their career, right? We know that the order in March of a horse's, where they stand with their peers is oftentimes changed in a dramatic way by the time they get to be a 4-year-old. But, you do get a good beat on them. And I think that's the benefit of a place like Eddie Woods. And, so we just started using Shug, and I guess the biggest challenge that I had is I always called him Shug, and I don't know, somebody pulled me aside and said, no, it rhymes with sugar or starts like sugar. So I really have to catch myself all the time when I talk to him or I address him. But, I just think that's a fascinating story with Shug and Shug. And, being in a position where he's taking outside clients and a partnership and, a public partnership, I don't know. I just think it's pretty cool, a person of that stature in the Hall of Fame. And, he's not done in his career. He wants, and he's in Ocala, and he's looking at babies and for other people. So I just think it's really cool to see somebody at that level and at that stage of their career still really, really passionate about the things that he's doing and the industry as a whole. So that was on first captain, and then Flight Line. He just walked out of the stall as an early 2-year-old, and he just clipped himself, and he got a really, significant wound to his hind end. And if you see pictures of him, it took us about 3 months to get that thing to the point where we could put the tack back on him. So in essence, we knew that the, you know, the latter part of his two-year-old year was in danger. But, you know, then he started to pick up the pace, and we were like, well, I'm not sure it's going to matter because he's uber, uber talented. So everything just came together, and they're in the right hands, and, you know, the right John Sadler and Shug, they're both the captains of the ships with these horses, and, you know, hopefully it's a good ride for all of us. It's, you know, the power of the partnership, Steve.
How did Costa come to be involved on Flight?
Yes. So David and Gordo, you know, keeps popping up in our conversations and actually in the TDN too with the horses that he's picked out. And he is the main agent aside from a couple horses that come from Europe. But David does all of his work, and I think his, you know, the body of work that the two brothers have, you know, Costas, I talked to him yesterday, and it's pretty phenomenal. You know, they were the owner of the year a couple years ago, and they keep at it. Obviously, they invest money, they invest the time, but they've built a great team. So, you know, they are the people that you want to partner with. You know, we all know partnerships are not easy, right? But better horses and the ability to communicate and to be experienced as an owner, I think helps. But still, you got to make sure when you're doing these things that you have the right partner or partners. And, you know, we try to be good partners as well. So just try to make it work every day.
Flightline's performance, and again, we're going back, kind of ping-ponging back and forth. First captain going at 7/8. That's a Shug specialty that we years ago identified that when Shug starts one at 7/8, it's usually a tell, and he's explained it on air with us several times, and so the fact that you know, he thought that first captain deserved the 7/8 chance made sense, and you know, he went and got the. Obviously, what's a nice Pletcher firster for Shadwell, Mahemo, and Jose Ortiz, you know, gets first captain up, and debuts, gets a 93 buyer in the effort. And obviously, you think, you know, well, that's, you know, we're halfway home on the day. Then attention turns to Flightline. And I, obviously, Terry, you can be hopeful. And, you know, we had read, I think, you know, anybody that reads National Turf, Andy Harrington, you read the Clocker reports, which were, you know, obviously enthusiastic, and, you know, he took money right away, and, you know, it seemed like he was a mojo horse. But for him to turn in that performance where Flavian Pratt basically did not move, was like a statue, and it you know, immediately based on what had happened earlier on the card, it was obvious that it was going to be a three-figure buyer. It was going to be 100 buyer or more. Turns in to be a 105, which puts him in elite company as a debut winner. I mean, talk about watching him just go to the front and improve his position, as Jay Privnett says.
Well, you know, we were all at the sale, Steve, in Ocala last week. And, you know, on a Wednesday afternoon, you know, we're hitting the refresh button because we knew, you know, first, you just never know, especially in California, if the baby races are going to go and the three-year-old races and the maidens. But anyway, we were just, you know, hitting the refresh button, and then we saw we were at the beginning of the day and the end of the day. So we were like, if this works out the way we hope it works out, we're going to have a pretty good day. And, you know, John Sadler, he had been really, really high, and we've been with him now for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, and you know, he's not one to really tout. You know, he's understated, as a lot of these top guys are, and but you know, this colt really, really was the first one that he brought up, and then he had Rock Your World, and all of a sudden, you know, we knew that he had one unknown really, really good horse, and we're hoping that he had a second one, but was just unknown. And, you know, the works were spectacular. I just had a granddaughter, and I know you just had a grandchild too. So
yeah, a little bit ago.
Yeah. So happy being a grandfather, but we are getting old. But the point being is, I was showing those videos even more, especially at the sale, than the videos of my granddaughter. But that's all right. We're in a great spot with our families, and we just thought that it would be a good debut if we didn't have anything go oops, and we broke a little just a touch on the tardy side, and then he just improved that position as you talked about, and it was captivating. I didn't think, obviously, when I saw him kind of geared down the last 16th of a mile, I didn't think he was gonna run, have that kind of time and to run that fast. But it does get you thinking. It does get you thinking. Is he one of the ones that kind of is in the zone that he's going to be able to push himself forward and really establish himself? And you're right. You look at the data, and there are some really, really top horses that started like this. We just have to get lucky and not get unlucky, in the sense that we got to keep him sound. But the fact that he's been able to not have up to this time, a whole lot of pressure applied, I think has got to help us, although he's been in training for a long time. So anyway, all those things go through your mind, and you just, you keep asking yourself, is this the one? That's what we, as owners and our partners, is, that's the question that keeps coming up, because it's a tough game, and, people are fighting and scratching and spending a lot of money to get horses like this. And I don't know, it's just a beautiful thing to be in, and it's the right time of the year, that's for sure.
The potential here and where you go from here, given the 3-year-old, there's still plenty of real estate on the 3-year-old front. And it's funny, on my website message board, the conversation started to percolate Saturday night about, how do you separate them, and being on the two coasts, and knowing that the Haskell Travers Pennsylvania Derby as late summer goals and opportunities are there at the same time, watching the way Flightline or particularly the way First Captain won, and really both of them have features and have pedigrees that we'll assume that long term they're routers, but there's also potential in the short term, things like the Woody Stevens for a horse like First Captain, if later at Belmont Stakes Day, the Jerkins obviously at Saratoga. I mean, how do you plan from here, Terry? Once everybody cools out, it's only 48 hours since the wins, but talk about the planning stages to make the most of their sophomore campaigns.
Yes, Steve. So we all hear it time and time again, the road answers. We'll see how it comes out, and I'll give those road answers that everybody knows, but it is an exciting time. The good thing with the partners, right? Everybody knows that we're anxious to find out where we go. That'll be up to John and to Shug. But they know what the market wants, right? The market wants, if you can get a horse to win a grade one going short, and then get him a grade one going two turns, in addition to the pedigrees that we have with these horses, that's a pretty exciting thing. So there's no diversion of the path that we're on. It's just a matter of the sequencing and of the timing. You take Flightline. I mean, I don't know. Can you run them back? What would that be? Like 6 weeks to the Woody Stevens, and off of one start. He's probably the kind of horse, if there was ever a horse that you would do that, it would be a horse like this, but it would be a big ask. you know, flying them across country and on a new racetrack and everything. But, you know, you'd have to think he'd be a legitimate force in there. And, So those are the discussions we've had with John so far. And you shrug, you basically, you know, just say, or you just ask the question, where are we going next? Shrug. But he's thinking about it, and he's pumped. So, yes, ultimately, we'd like to get to the Travers. That's kind of, we all love to be at Saratoga, all of us. You know, that's kind of our home track. And to think that we'd have a shot to bring all these good horses together with the other ones in their class is pretty cool to think about what in a couple months up at the Spa.
Well, races that come even, you know, well before, and there's some interesting horses certainly we can work in beside these two smashing debut winners, and Flightline and First Captain create just an amazing coincidence and story on Saturday that you know, people right away were, you know, were captured by. And there's been, you know, McLean's Music, probably the most recent debut winner in that realm of what we saw from Flightline on Saturday. And First Captain, you know, just polished and professional, and a normally a debut 93 buyer win would, you know, would make everybody's day, but it only got better from there. And looking ahead, you know, I just had Elliot Walden on, Terry, to introduce the conversation regarding John Ward's passing. But then I, you know, had to discuss Derby. We can discuss Derby with you, too, and talk about getting involved with Obesos.
Yeah, I'm glad you did that, because the two Foley boys are big kids. And they're very passionate about this. So to think that we would have talked about everybody else but Obesos, and I'm on my way to Churchill Downs in a couple minutes, I probably would have taken some grief. So I'm glad you brought him up. But, you know, we bought Jeff Lifton, who works with us. We've been a long time, a teammate, over 15 years, and he's at Churchill, and he's a very outgoing guy, and he's friends with a lot of people on the backside. So the Foley kids, you know, they stayed on him, and they say sooner or later we're going to get one with the black and gold. And it was like 2 days before Christmas, Obesos had won at the fairgrounds off the turf going 5.5, but he did it the right way. And Jeff said, you know, I think we should make a move here. And, you know, he was dead right. He really, really got locked on to a good one, and we bought a third of them. And he came back and he won the A other than, and was a little flat in his first start in the Risen Star going two turns, but we thought he deserved another shot. And I thought he put in a, you know, probably a little bit better than solid effort in Louisiana Derby. But I think he's a live, you know, he's a live wise guy horse, Steve. I think, you know, the Sheets guys, they like him some. And I wasn't too keen to see Kettle River come out of there and kind of that's going to obviously affect the pace. And I think we're a horse that is really going to need a good, strong, fast pace up in front of us. But anyway, we're in with a shot. You know, we're not going over there with 100-to-1 shot, right, because I know all 20 of us that own all or part of the Derby entrance are dreaming the big dream and dreaming about being up on that winner's stand on Saturday at about 6:30. So it's, and we know it's a cool event, and it is very humbling. And we do feel very blessed to be part of it and to be part of the biggest stage in our great business.
Well, it's got to be exciting. And as it happens, that was at a dinner gathering last night, including Alex Foley, and they're real excited, and with good reason. Yeah. I mean, that work the other morning, it went under the radar because it was early morning hours. He's one of those that goes out early, and also people they'll only see 48 flat for the half mile, but that wasn't the work. The work came after the 48, because he then proceeded to go another half mile, essentially, around to the backside and gallop out, I mean, really strongly. And, you know, given that he's a horse that, you know, is going to come with that one run, that's what you're looking for anyway. And, the pace, even though Cato's out, Terry, and yes, it's going to take a little bit of that, that early lick away, but... there's going to be a horse or two with speed that draws a post tomorrow where they're going to have to use their speed. And no matter what happens in the Derby, for the most part, the pace gets prompted. Last year, a little bit of a surprise the way Audible won, all the way around. But the pace will be at least square.
Yeah, I agree, Steve. You know, and you think about it, it can't happen, right? Because they can't all reach down and grab when they got 20 horses going into the first turn. Like, that wouldn't be very pretty. They've got to spread out some. So I agree. It's not going to be a dawdling pace. We can bet on. We can, guarantee that.
He'll put in his run and. We've been talking about him. Actually, we've been talking about him on the show for quite a while as one of those ideal key horses that that comes running late. And in fact, I even may have even referenced Terry. Who was it in 2006? I don't know why I have so much a mental block about his name. The one that got hit. Right, got hit with the horseshoe in the chest.
You're talking about Flashy Bull.
Flashy Bull.
Flashy Bull. That was when we got to know each other on the backside. You were just getting rolling everything. That was that was the year of Barbaro. That was our first Derby starter. So I can't believe it when you think back. It's 15 years ago. We got to get this time. The time channel to slow down a little bit. we got too much to do. We we don't have enough time, but it's good. It's good. This game, I just when you think about it, I know we've got all different kinds of challenges and, we're not all of us, we're all successful in our own right. And we all think that we have the answers. But I mean, our game is really in a lot of respects, Brett, has come in a good path, and we've made good progress on a lot of things. And I just say to people, we need to be hard on ourselves in situations and in sectors of our business that we should be hard on ourselves. But we've done a lot of really good things, and I would hope that in 2021 we realize and we take pride in the fact. That we're making good progress in a lot of places. So, I don't know. I'm bullish on the, and I know you are too. I'm bullish that this crazy game, we're going to keep trying to refine it and to make it better. What other choice do we have? Other thing that comes. What other choice do we have? Like, we're not going into the manufacturing business. We're all too old. Our group of our generation. So let's make this game better. And I don't know. I feel like a vibrancy, especially at the sales, that I probably haven't felt in a long time. So I would bet this business. I'd go long on this business to bring in a term from Wall Street.
Terry Finley, everybody, and WestPointTB.com, West Point with a very special Saturday, a Saturday you couldn't possibly have planned, but ended up creating a great storyline as two seven-figure yearlings make good in their debuts and have got huge upside and obviously in great hands between John Sadler and Shug. And you know, one way to not have any trouble with pronouncing Shug is to go the Siaka route and call him Claude Ray, like the horse that we debuted a horse Saturday too. He did not win, but we knew he wasn't gonna. He was just in to get his first experience. He's a turf miler or so, but we named one Claude Ray. So that's an avenue for you, Terry.
You know, it comes up on my phone as Claude Ray. So maybe let me give that some try, and I'll circle back to you. I'll see how it works over the next couple months.
That's a
good suggestion, Steve.
Terry, well done. Congratulations. I'll see you probably tomorrow morning.
Absolutely. I look forward to it. Keep up the great work, Steve. Thank you very much.
Terry. Terry Finley, everybody, and the team at West Point, and you know, Tom, and he mentioned Jeff, and of course, Rich Migliore is going to join us next, and Rich's son Joe. Joe was active at OBS too, not just in West Point, but with his he's got this Migliore bloodstock business that he now has started. And Joe was on pretty high up. I think I saw one in the $500,000 range that he bought. Yeah, he bought from my man Dave Scanlon, a frosted filly, hip 1033. There it is, Migliore bloodstock. Rich is going to join us next, and I'm sure he'll take us. We're 20 minutes into hour two, so I'm sure he'll take us to the Oaks draw at 11. So thanks to Terry and to Elliot Walden getting us rolling here on Derby Week with two of the Derby horses. And both are going to be, you know, longer prices, but every Derby hopeful is a winner until they publish the chart on. I can't even say until they cross the wire anymore, right? Because you know they crossed the wire 2 years ago, and there was a winner, and then there wasn't, then there was another winner. Mig is next. Back after this to Churchill Downs at the races, Sirius XM Derby coverage. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
A great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.